down the railroad track. It makes me feel so doggone blue to listen to that old smokestack. Drivers are rolling on, leaving me here behind. Give me back them good old days and let me ramble down the line. Lonesome train, I love to hear the whistle blow. She's taking the sun and leaving the rain and making me want to go. I've got the blues, longing for her company. Many miles from where I am to the only one for me. It's so lonesome here, waiting for the manifest. I hope that engineer is kind enough to let me be his guest. Old pal to me, take me everywhere I want to go, get my transportation free.
Dave Monk, your Prairie Monk, WEFT Champagne 90.1 on your FM dial.
And Dave on the board.
And we've been trying something different here. We're normally doing environmental things each week, and that involves a lot of the sort of things I come in contact with. But David's been very helpful in helping to put some of those things together. So last week, we added a link, and that's a link to about 70 pictures. It was associated with a memorial week, and it was looking at memorial friends and relatives, but also at the funereal art and culture that you find in a cemetery. When we are on the radio and recording with Urbana Public Television help, that program, we may only mention that segment because we had a visitor, Tom Bruno, and we didn't want to waste time since we don't have the luxury of having council people here very often. So we put that up as a link, and Jason Leggett has been helpful in doing that at Urbana Public Television. We're hoping it works. I've been doing things with a cell phone because sometimes it's handy to carry a cell phone and not be too invasive. But I think a single-lens reflex electronic in style gives you more flexibility. The cell phone is telling you what your exposure is. Your single-lens reflex, you have a choice of exposure time and aperture and things like that. Last week's effort would be with the cell phone, so not quite as detailed as we might like. A lot of our work is visual, and so we're trying to include that in our program, resting assured that we are still on a radio program and doing that in that way. We're streamed. You can get us around the world in a streaming on your computer. But we think that you know that we're local. You know that we are a certain time of the year. We're a certain climate. But you can translate that to your particular climate and your particular interest. There are often parallels.
Maybe we should mention to folks what you're talking about when you talk about YouTube. It may seem strange that there's a radio program that is actually that people make a video out of, but it actually means, as Dave has just said, that you can watch his show, listen to his program anytime that you want to. Now, you can do that with various other programs at various other radio stations. At WFT, the way Dave's show works is if you go to YouTube and type in The Prairie Monk, strangely, the word "the" really does help find his programs. You can actually find an entire series of upwards of 50, I think at this point, episodes of his show that have been made into videos and have been put on online. Making them into videos has two advantages. One, we can actually go back after the fact and add maps and pictures of the plants and whatever other things that Dave is talking about on the show, so you can actually see what he's been saying. This last week, what happened is Dave put together a slideshow of things that pictures he had taken at a cemetery, and that has now also been put up. So if you find the video that goes along with his show for last week, there's an additional several minute long slideshow that shows you headstones from the cemetery that he went to. So again, it may seem a little odd to have video to go with a radio show, but it really does provide us with the extra ability to give you something more than what you can. Radio is wonderful. You can use your imagination, but sometimes you can use more than imagination. Pictures can actually help. And so if you go to YouTube and look for The Prairie Monk and his channel and UPTV, you can find video, and it actually is an enhancement of just the radio version of the program.
Yes, it's very true that often a picture is worth a thousand words. And so the use of a picture is very helpful. The TV program, when it goes up twice a week, is limited to 1 hour, but we can actually add material to the YouTube program, so it can be longer than an hour. I have a number of rants. The main one I'm having is about mowing. I was reminded that on Route 10, we usually are mowing out. Our railroad bed runs adjacent to Route 10, and the mowing is often up and over our territory a lot, so we have to think about putting up no trespassing signs, even for roadside mowing, because it's very invasive, and it takes out our plants like ceanothus, which is New Jersey tea, which we pick and send to Prairie Moon to distribute to other sites. And to have it mown at a peak time is not very helpful. So it's costly to run along 4 miles of Route 10 and put in no trespassing signs, but we are at a loss to know what else to do. Sometimes we can silkscreen signs, and that's helpful, but then you have to have a silkscreen press, and you have to have a place to do it, and you have to have the time to do it. So in that case, we might have to be resourceful and just use no trespassing signs. Whether you have a backyard lawn or front yard lawn, you have to think about it. People in the West Coast, especially California, are having drought situations, and they're starting to have to realize that they can't always have a pea-green lawn that's well-fertilized and well-watered. It's getting to be that they have to economize on water, use their bathwater to water the plants, and generally care about the water that's coming out of the aquifers or coming down the Colorado River, because there's been no snow this year, and so the drought will continue. In the Midwest, we've been lucky to have not only adequate rain, but almost too much rain, and it's different. But the prairies that we watch for and care for enjoy the rain. The Grand Prairie of East Central Illinois was used to swampy ground and wetness, and so a wet season is very good. So the biomass that is coming up with the prairie is absolutely huge, and the plants are there and they're flowering. And so I want to say a little bit about mowing. In the first place, mowing is almost next to godliness. It's neat and tidy and controlled. And I wish we could get to the point where it could be more flexible to meet different situations. There's a feeling that every small town should be, in quotes, mown out for a mile on either side of the town. That makes a statement which invites people who might be wanting to do economic things that this is a neat and tidy town and it cares for itself. But when you're down to 0.01% of the prairie left, you're almost talking about an endangered ecosystem. And then you have to beg for those little plots that are perhaps near towns to be preserved. We have one such plot just outside of Urbana, which was one of our cherished remnant prairies. It's between Main Street and 130, opposite Behringer Commons on 150, and it's about a quarter of a mile long now. It has been disturbed for roadside widening, and it's no longer expressing its remnant nature, although the plants are there, and trees have grown. Once you drain such a site, the trees like the drainage, and so they come in. The area at the moment is being mown, and four more trees have been planted as a celebration of the Kickapoo Trail. I would like this site to be considered a prime site for redevelopment as a remnant site, because the soil is still there and the bacteria and the fungi are still there. The groundhogs are still there. So as you wander around the township roads, you will often see 5 acres of mowing. That's neat and tidy. It also says something about your ability to seek employment. If you have a homestead and you have farmland and you've had a job and then you retired, so that you do have a farming leg and a retirement leg, one of the things that you have gotten used to doing over the years is to mow. And it's almost recreational mowing. But it makes that plot of 5 acres in front of your farmhouse very pristine and neat and tidy. Sometimes there's a sculpted piece of agricultural equipment sitting in front, or a glacial erratic. But we have to think about the use of the gasoline. Even in a small riding mower is quite a use of gasoline. So as you go around, look to see whether this lawn has been over-fertilized. It's pea green. Have a look to see if there's any weeds in it, because if it has been over-herbicided, it will have no weeds. I like to see a lawn with a few weeds in it, because the herbicide used is usually meant to take out broadleaves and to leave the grasses. If I see a dandelion somewhere, I'm inclined to think that that lawn has just about the right amount of herbicide, not too much. And if you have too much, guess where it goes? It goes down the gutter, into the local creek, down into the ocean, and it's ingested by the fish that you eventually eat. And it's no wonder that you end up with DDT in your breast milk or whatever. It's some of these things you don't need much to change your bodily functions. So one of the things that is difficult is that the mowing, especially roadside mowing, is paid for by the hour. So the more you mow, the more you make. And that is often done with people who have a volunteer job as well as a real job or a second job. There's a problem that if a plant doesn't look like corn or soybeans, it shouldn't exist. And that includes insects and animals. A good prairie will have 2,000 different species of insects. Some of them are so small you almost need a microscope to see them. But they're there. And the soils, if undisturbed, have bacteria and fungi and microorganisms that make the soil what it has become, one of the richest agricultural sites in the world. You know, add all that glacial till from Canada, and it's rich, and so rich you can't grow livestock on it. The land is worth more for corn and soybeans, and sometimes wheat and milo, but mostly corn and soybeans. The difficulty is that the Jeffersonian Platte, which is east, north, south, east, and west, is square, and our ecology of prairie is not usually confined to a rectilinear pattern. And that means if you're going to mow your prairie or work with your prairie, it sometimes cuts across the corner of your field, or it might be in a drainage ditch, or it doesn't obey the rectilinear situation, especially when you come to creeks and rivers like the Sangamon, where you have a water shed that makes its own way through the properties, and sometimes not as a river but as an abraded situation where the water is flowing more generally. There's a fear of particular farm weeds. One of them is a bull thistle, and I rather enjoy the bull thistle. It can grow up to 5 feet tall. It has Scotch thistle-type flowers on it. It's not to be confused with Canada thistle, which is much shorter and much more invasive. The bull thistle is often an indication of good soil and perhaps high in calcium. It is an excellent pollinator, and we like to see it stay around, but often an area is mown just because there's one or two bull thistles. That reminds us that perhaps we would hope that people who mow would enjoy to get some education about what the plants are in the prairie. If you know that there are half a dozen grasses and about 100 broadleaf species, it would be interesting to get people off the tractor onto a short program which gives them an idea of what they're mowing. So sometimes we have farm weeds that have escaped from the farm, and sometimes we have prairie weeds which take advantage of the disturbed site. So if you're around a badger hole where the soils are disturbed and fertilized, you will have prairie plants that are like to be fertilized and like to be moist and like to be in soft soil. So if you create millions of acres of soft soil that's well fertilized, then you're going to get those sorts of weeds. And if they appear in the roadside prairie, then that is a crime too. Sometimes we're dealing with crops that were good when we first came and had livestock. The story is that European people who came here were used to crops that they had evolved for having cattle calve in March, so that you would get a drop of calves and good milk and good beef. Unfortunately, the prairie doesn't come to its peak till about now, and there was not a native fodder for cattle. So then came in the clovers and grass crops that are useful for fodder, and they would start to grow early in the season and quickly, and what was left over from winter could provide food early in the spring. So you get big barns with hay mows where hay was stored over winter, fed the cattle during winter and in the early spring. And some of those plants are legumes because it makes good and healthy hay. One of them is a sweet clover. There are a yellow version and a white version. And it, in its day, was a really wonderful pasture crop. It could be mown 8 times a year, and it just seemed to enjoy that and came up from a root. And it is still used by the Department of Transportation as a sort of natural fertilizer, because it takes nitrogen out of the air and converts it in a form of nitrogen that can be used and therefore acts as a natural fertilizer. And despite the fact that prairie people have tried to say, this is an invasive species, please don't plant it along the roadside adjacent to our prairie so that it invades and destroys the only prairie we have left. But it still happens. There's another one called vetch. It's a blue flower. It was regarded as erosion control, so you often see it on overpasses. But unfortunately, it has one big root, and the top spreads out nicely, and all the erosion can continue underneath. So it's not regarded highly as a crop to be put on roadsides, and it's no longer useful for cattle. But it's still there, and it still gets planted. Somewhere in the biological world, there is vetch and sweet clover. And it is flowering at the present time. We tend to pull it out if we can. If it's a nice wet day, we pull it out by the roots so that it doesn't come back again. Unfortunately, when as soon as it gets a little drier, you happen to break off the 5 or 6 stems that come out from that root. That's still not bad. You're taking out of action perhaps hundreds and hundreds of seeds. So either cutting it off or pulling it is helpful. Better to pull it. Whenever we pull it, we usually harden the soil, because the prairie plants have been used to hard soils, and they can grow in hard soils. For 10,000 years, there's been rainfall which hardens the soil, there's rainfall, there's buffalo hooves, there's just a natural consolidation of the soil. If you pull that plant up and leave it soft, then you a gazillion of those seeds are going to grow again. So we tend to put our heel on that hole and make it hard. A trick for planting is often to put a roller over your prairie, a light roller, to create a site that's more advantageous for prairie seed rather than for farmland seed. Farmland seed likes the soil to be tickled whether you have no-till or not. You usually tickle the soil and put the seed in, and it grows well. I'm looking at my notes here. We would hope that one of the educational things that could happen is that we could have spot mowing. One of the big problems we have is that mowing seems to start on August the 1st. That's when many of the plants that are weed plants have come to seed. And in order to stop that seed from happening, you mow early. But prairie plants, like New England aster, for instance, grows well into November. So to cut off a roadside prairie early in the season is an anathema. So in that case, if you have a patch of Canada thistle, there's another problem in that the mowing on August the 1st, by that time the Canada thistle has flowered and has this nice fluffy seed that flows all over the adjacent farmland. It doesn't only flow over, but if you come along on August the 1st when it's nice and ripe and you put a 15-foot rotary mower into it, you even spread this seed around. We would like to see some selective mowing of that seed before it came to the peak period. So spot mowing or spot identification is important. If people are upset with something like a bull thistle, then you can also spot remove the bull thistle with a machete. If there's five of them, you don't need to have a 16-foot mower mow a whole half acre of ground in order to get the five plants. You get off your tractor and you hit the plants that you think are invasive. I would not be removing them, but other people would like to see that. It's sort of regarded as a weed that is not a friendly sight to see if you're coming into a small town, for instance. So the time of mowing is important. The size of the equipment is huge. It's equipment that has to go through things like cordgrass, which is very, very hard to mow. So you have to have strong equipment, big equipment, and it's usually 15 foot wide. And those wings can come up some, so you can mow a narrower strip, but very seldom are those wings pulled up. We would like to see some of the mowing much more narrow, so that the roadside would be down to the ditch. But in many cases, when you use a very big mower, you either have to be out on the road in the traffic to mow down to the ditch, or you go down into the ditch and mow up the other side of the ditch, which is what we try to arrange with the Department of Transportation to, at this time of the year, to not mow up the other side. So that would imply that we need a range of mowers. We need big mowers for big things, but we need a smaller mower, a narrower mower for roadsides where you don't need to mow more than perhaps 6 or 8 feet. Some states are very aware of this, and they know that it won't change easily, so at the departmental level, they have a thing called a midnight requisition. They bring in smaller tractors and replace the bigger tractors, and that's rather helpful. They will also do things like make sure that the tractors haven't been working on a site like Canada Thistle and then move directly into another area. So in some states, your equipment that you're mowing with is checked out before you get to mow a roadside for the like of hay. We don't want weeds to be spread around. There's also a problem that if you have a stake or a culvert or something to go around, you tend to mow it with a 15-foot mower. That means you take out a huge swath of a roadside prairie. Better to leave that for a smaller mower to come in and mow around the stake or around the culvert. But that very seldom happens. It's usually the mowing of the stake with a bigger mower. There's also a feeling that if you have a railroad bed, you need to have at least a 45-degree angle of mowing to allow for visual corridor if there's a train there. If there's no train, there's not a really a need for that in the same way. It's like you don't mow a 45-degree angle across a cornfield. Sometimes you do, and sometimes people are wise enough to take off the tops of the corn so that you can see at a junction other cars arriving. But sometimes that volunteer mowing is extended to 250 feet or even more than that as an excuse for roadside visibility. And that's not necessary, and it could be handled by a smaller piece of equipment and a lesser degree angle. We have changed that in some places by taking a heavy wood pieces like leftover telephone poles or and lying them down at a 45-degree angle and putting a sign on them to say, please do not mow the prairie. Just keep to your own right of way and do a sensible amount of cutting of the road crossing instead of waddling along for a larger area of prairie removal. Drainage ditches that get in the way sometimes. If you have a 16-foot or 15-foot mower that goes down the drainage ditch, you are often mowing a lot of prairie. We've said something about the climate, but in east central Illinois, you have a wet spring and a wet fall and a dry summer. So you tend to want to beg your drivers or operators to understand that is there and to mow accordingly. We have in the Department of Transportation about 2,000 employees and only about 12 landscapers who are in control of this sort of thinking. So that involves a lot of informal work between the landscaper and the mowing detail.
This, hold on, this would be a really good point to jump in since it's a little bit after halfway through the show. You're tuned to WEFT Champaign 90.1 FM. This is the Prairie Monk Show, and the date is June the 7th, 2015. Dave is talking about mowing in particular to, this morning. And we'll mention again that if you go to YouTube, it won't be immediate. It'll probably take a week or two. You can actually watch this at your leisure. You can actually find the episode for June the 7th. It will be on the UPTV channel, which has been created for the Prairie Monk Show. If you are around your cable television this Friday afternoon at 1 in the afternoon, you can actually see this as they will broadcast it live, and then they rebroadcast it Monday evenings at, is it 7 o'clock?
1 o'clock on Friday and right. 6 o'clock on 6. Tuesday.
Okay. And again, at your that's when you would have to actually, again, you have to go at their time and watch it for, if you watch it on UPTV's cable channel. But you can watch it at your leisure if you go to YouTube. And again, Dave has been talking about mowing in particular on this week's show.
Well, mowing has something to do with seeding in the first place. There's usually about 5 or 6 feet of roadside seed, and a lot of your planting has to do with how you handle the area later. If you put in a lot of switchgrass or a lot of one species, then in nature that species accumulates litter, and it would be hit by lightning, and it would burn, and that would allow the heat and light into the plant early. Well, if you're on a roadside, then there's a fear of burning. Settlers came. When they came, they didn't want to see spontaneous burns. But if you're dealing with an ecosystem that's a land-based ecosystem that's dependent on fire or has gotten used to fire, then and you create that sort of atmosphere by planting a whole bunch of switchgrass that you don't want to burn, then there's a problem, and it accumulates so that after 10 years of no burning, somebody puts a cigarette butt into it and you have an inferno. So there's something to do with the seeding before you get to the mowing that affects the mowing later. You can mow that switchgrass, but it responds something like the sweet clover. It enjoys to be mown and freed so that heat and light can come in. So the selection of species is important. It's also important where the species come from. If you are in the western states, then you can harvest a mixed prairie with a combine harvester, whereas if you're in Illinois, you have to often hand-pick the seed. It's more expensive. So there's a tendency to get low-bid seed from out of state, which is not local. You need to monitor who's collecting the seed, who's selling the seed, who's planting the seed. So if you plant the seed, you have the choice of planting it with a truac or a range type drill, which has very big droppers and allows fluffy seed to drop into a chute and then go into the soil and have tamping wheels to tamp it down. That sort of drill is used on rangelands to improve pasture, and it's used for prairie planting. You can't plant prairie seed with a normal wheat or oats or corn or soybean drill. That seed is heavy and it drops out of a little cup and falls down a narrow chute and gets into the soil very easily. The prairie seed, especially if it's got little umbrellas on it, has to be pushed down a 2-inch dropper, and you hope that that works. So sometimes a little vibration, and the use of the equipment to give you a range of seed. So you need someone standing on the drill to stir the seed up every once in a while to make sure that all the little seed didn't go out first and leave the fluffy seed till later. So working with the contractor who gets the job for replanting. Then there's a time of planting. We spent a little time saying something about the climate, wet, dry, wet. If you have equipment around at the end of the contractual season, often there's a race to put in seed in the fall. Well, if you do that, prairie seed is very slow to grow. I have had endless contact with people who have put in seed with Pheasants Forever and others, and after a year, they tear the soil up because it didn't grow. Well, let's face it, prairie plants have a deep root, and they take years to grow, and sometimes it'll take 5 years or 10 years before you really will see the plant you've planted. Some plants, like Indian grass, will grow during the season, but they have a different sort of root system. And if you plant too much of that, you're not going to get the broadleaves. But when you plant in fall, you have to face the fact that in spring, you're going to have a bunch of weeds that grow quickly. They're annuals, not perennials. Most of the prairie plants are perennials. So you can do that, but it will be a challenge between the weeds and the prairie. You can control it by mowing the weeds just before they start to have seeds on them. And then that will allow the prairie plants to grow through, if you're lucky. Better to plant in June or July or late May when the soil is starting to dry up. The prairie plants are used to it. They can enjoy it. They can grow without the presence of the weeds that like to have free roam of well-fertilized soil and disturbance and moisture. So if you plant in the late spring, your prairie plants have a chance to grow and then go into the fall and into winter and grow during the cold season and have a chance to compete with the second year of weed growth that will come from disturbed soils. You can also work with construction people if instead of having them do what is easier to do is to take the landscape and remold it. That means you dig up all the prairie soil and you remodel it. Much better for the prairie if you know your limits to sit with a high hoe and take a drainage ditch out that you need and leave the rest of the soil relatively undisturbed. When you go through and dig up, say, 4 feet in some places, 2 inches in other places, you disturb the soil totally. So when you look at the soil on places like 150 now that's in this process, you will see lots and lots of equisetum or horsetail. You will see the plants that have been had their heads cut off, but they have roots they come through, like dock and compass plant. But a little bit of thought on construction and how you do it. It might be a little more costly, but it's a lot more friendly to preserving the site. And when you do this, have patience. Don't come back in a year and tear it up because it didn't grow. It's growing. You don't know it. You don't see it. So I've been down on Route 45 looking at the prairie to see what's come. And we have two sorts of mitigation. One is that pallets have been put down over the existing prairie and the prairie plants are starting to grow through. And so they're coming back. And I've been taking photographs of that. But at the same time, the area was hydro-seeded with a sort of roadside mix, and it's growing very well, and it will give the presence of seeds that we haven't been able to quite find out who planted what. So that's a problem. You have to talk to the contractors and talk to the organizers of the contractors, because there's about 50 different groups that are going to work on this site. If it's a grid, you're going to have to talk to the people who design the grid, the people who gather up the right-of-way, the people who mow the right-of-way to make it accessible, people who have construction easements, and the people who do the various engineering from the point of having the linesman put up the poles and then put up the wires and do the things they have to do. So you have to be able to talk to all of these groups and do so with some degree of tolerance, because there's an easy way of doing things. One of them is to use a lot of herbicide, and we've been able to manage not to do that. Then when you're done and it's 10 years along, you've got to think about working with the local village or to burn the prairie that has arrived. Once it has enough fuel matrix, it helps to be able to burn. But in many cases, that burning is denied because it, one, will make smoke. That makes smoke is not the prairie burning. It's often the brome grass and the roadside species that are right on the edge of the road that grow early and they green earlier. And if you burn in spring, for instance, you've got to have a lot of smoke from the roadside plants. Prairie burns fairly cleanly and quickly. So maintenance comes into the action. Sometimes there's also the ditches are cleaned out to the point that they don't always let the water out. If you go along 150 at the moment, you'll see big puddles. And that to us is an advantage in some cases because it allows us to have a wetland species. But it's really a disadvantage if you're going to have a stable road because there's water there that can get underneath the road. The road on 150 between 130 and Mayview Cemetery has been raised about 2.5 feet, and that will be wonderful for the people who have to encounter a bird bath there when there's a flood. But that water will have to ooze across a farm field, which if you look at old aerial photographs, there was a sort of a grass waterway there, but that is no longer existing. We also have to think about animals. There's an excuse for having a clean side to the road just in case animals don't get there and create roadkill that people would like to avoid if they could. not a big problem, but it's there. There's also the excuse that you need to remove the nuclei that would create a snowbank, especially on north-south roads. So if snowbanks are on north-south roads, why don't we do things on north-south roads but not do them on east-west roads? And if you grow up in a climate where you have blizzards, then why do you want to start off at Paxton and drive to Champaign and die in the process because there's a snowbank? If you grow up with snowbanks, deal with the things and don't expect to drive everywhere in the middle of winter. So we have these sorts of debates. We also would like to have a little parking lot somewhere. If I park on 150 at the present time, I really need to get out there with a yellow jacket on because I'm right on the roadside, and it may even be illegal to park there. So just to have a cooperative situation where there's a roadside offshoot where you could stop and deal with a prairie situation is very helpful. We also need to remove weed trees. And one of them is an olive. And this week we were removing weed trees. And to help me, the prairie plants that are underneath were almost waving their wooden leg and saying thank you for removing the tree that was shading out. We didn't remove one tree because it had a bird nest in it, but actually removing the olive trees is very helpful. I think that gets me. I want to remind you that we're very interested in a prairie coming back between Main Street and 130 in Urbana. My next rant is on salvage. This week I pulled a functional bicycle out of the dumpster. I have plastic 2-gallon drums, a lot of cardboard that is unbroken and unflattened. I have constantly tried to figure out how to recycle things. One of the things I've been talking about is winter coats. And the Salvation Army says they do store winter coats for the next season, but they do have to be clean and non-torn and fairly presentable. So don't arrive at the Salvation Army with a bunch of winter clothing that is not very respectable. I've been taking plastic pipes to Habitat for Humanity. I take a lot of things to the idea store. They're just interesting bits and pieces. And I do wish there would be a better group of salvagers who are also repair people. We have jobs for people. We also need, as we put in interim trails, we need to look at railroad lines and how, if we are having a debate about interim rails going back as rails, if you're going to put in a rail trail, how do you engineer it so that a railroad could come back in? A lot of people don't believe in that, but we're talking about fast tracks that are 250 miles an hour so that people can get to Chicago and have a day's work there. And that's up for grabs. And if you think about the corridor from Champaign to Chicago, that's one of our most unique prairie sites on the 200 feet wide right away. And if you're going to have fast traffic, you're going to be on that corridor destroying that prairie. This week we had the burned out elevator at Armenia has been salvaged and the remnants taken down. I've been out there several times to check that at near to Monticello and Allerton Park, and we're very sad that we have lost that. That's one of the problems of gathering up land. If you're in the ring counties around Chicago, there's often a lot of criticism of organizations that buy up land while they can for preservation and when they haven't fully developed the land that they have. So you see that we have 25 miles to Kickapoo State Park, and that's not developed yet. And we also have 33 miles in the Monticello, Cisco, Decatur, Clinton area that is waiting for the possible use of that as a trail or even restoration rail, and at least prairie preservation. So we hope that we can keep those resources together. That's a real challenge. We don't have much money to do that. So it's a volunteer effort, basically. We've also been working with 3 miles between Bonneville and Seymour, and we're hoping that the elevators will buy and keep intact that line so in the future we may get historic trains into Champaign from Monticello Railroad Museum. That won't happen quickly and might not happen at all, but if we don't buy the land now when it's available, we'll never be able to think that way. I'm pleased to report that Rantoul Prairie is doing very well. The purple coneflowers are just coming out, and the roses are coming out, and we've been working there. As an offshoot of that, I went with Elizabeth Kirby to a site where she's been working. It's the Sangamon River Prairie. It's 160 acres of wonderful prairie reconstruction on farmland on the banks of the Sangamon River. So there's forest on the banks, and Liz has been taking out honeysuckle, which is an invasive weed in that area. And the prairie is next door, outside the limits of the forest, and it's savanna. The big old trees are sort of like a shape of a woolpack cloud, and the prairie plants are underneath. I took a photograph of a smilax, which is a plant that grows in the forest. So that as you get to the edge timber in the forest, you get different prairie plants. A very nice site with a nice trail through it. You should go to the Fisher area, go to the Forest Preserve, the website, and you'll find out where it is. We're still working with a site at Weldon, which has been a total invasion of a quarter of a mile of the prairie corridor that we have, and on a warranty deed, which is a very good deed. So that involves legal work and thinking of prairies in a longer term, longer distance situation, and working with local farmers, which local farmers have been basically very good, apart from one or two exceptions. We have been very, very lucky to have farmers who have been very respectful of what we do. I would like to add that last night I got a call on Facebook from my nephew, and we worked with my iPhone and Macintosh computer, and we had Skype up, and so I could talk to my brother, and that was kind of a technological achievement. We've had attempts to do Skype before, but it has floated away. But it is nice to see my relatives in Australia, and it's sort of an achievement to be able to get some of these things into action. David sent me a note about a new Google program which might allow us to sort our visual material more effectively. It's one of our concerns is that sometimes I will take 50 or 60 photographs that have meaning, but we can't put that up on a radio program, so we have to do something with a blog or a link or a slideshow that gets that sort of information to you. And a lot of you aren't going to have time or the ability to get out there and work with these things. So photographs and charts and maps and rather helpful, and we hope we can continue that.
1 minute.
I think we're near to the end, so I will say this is Dave Monk, your Prairie Monk, WEFT Champaign, 90.1 on your FM dial. And if you want to be involved, give me a call, 351-1911. Or my cell phone is 840-1911. And even if it's just one or two of you, it's very, very helpful to find people interested. I was at Rantoul just recently, and the cemetery people nearby have been using their heavy equipment to pick up things like roll away sofas and things like that we can't possibly lift ourselves, and so they've done a cleanup, and it was nice to talk to that gentleman about that. And we've had other just interested people who park there and are interested in the area, and then are somewhat amazed to find out that there's a prairie behind us and has all sorts of interesting daisies growing in the prairie. So I do field trips sometimes, and that is rather rewarding.